It was Gilma, I think, who was peeking from the kitchen window as I descended the wooden stairway at midnight. A cat was asleep on the bottom step, directly in my path, but I respectfully stepped over it. I wanted to kick it into the street. Two cars were parked in the garage. One was my Spitfire, top up to keep the cats out, and the other was a long, shiny black Mercedes with red and white butcher knives painted on the doors. Under the knives were phone numbers in green paint. Someone had once told Mr. Max Hocutt that he could completely write off the cost of a new car, any car, if he used it for business and some sort of logo was painted on the doors. He bought a new Mercedes and became a knife sharpener. He said his tools were in the trunk. The car was 10 years old and had been driven less than 8,000 miles. Their father had also preached to them the sinfulness of women driving, so Mr. Max was the chauffeur. I eased the Spitfire down the gravel drive and waved at Gilma peeking from behind the curtain. She jerked her head away and disappeared. The jail was 6 blocks away. I had slept for about 30 minutes. Danny Padgett was being fingerprinted when I arrived. The sheriff's office was in the front section of the jail, and it was packed with deputies and reserves and volunteer firemen and everybody with access to a uniform and a police scanner. Wiley Meek met me on the front sidewalk. "It's Danny Padgett," he said with great excitement. I stopped for a second and tried to think. "Who?" "Danny Padgett, from the island?" I'd been in Ford County less than 3 months and had yet to meet a single Padgett. They, as always, kept to themselves, but I'd heard various installments of their legend with much more to follow. Telling Padgett stories was a common form of entertainment in Ford County. Wiley gushed on. "I got some great shots just as they got him out of the car. Had blood all over him. Great pictures. The girl's dead."
"What girl?"
"The one he killed. Raped her, too. At least that's the rumor."
"Danny Padgett," I mumbled to myself as the sensational story began to sink in. I had my first glimpse of the headline, no doubt the boldest one the Times had run in many years. Poor old Spot had shied away from the jolting stories. Poor old Spot had gone bankrupt. I had other plans. We pushed our way inside and looked around for Sheriff Coley. I'd met him twice during my brief stint with the Times, and I had been impressed with his polite and warm nature. He called me Mr. and said sir and ma'am to everyone, always with a smile. He had been the sheriff since the massacre in 1943, so he was pushing 70 years of age. He was tall and gaunt, without the obligatory thick stomach required of most Southern sheriffs. On the surface, he was a gentleman, and both times I'd met him, I'd later wondered how such a nice man could be so corrupt. He emerged from a back room with a deputy, and I, practicing my assertiveness, rushed to him. "Sheriff, just a couple of questions," I said sternly. There were no other reporters present. His boys, the real deputies, the part-timers, the wannabes, the jackleg constables with homemade uniforms, they all got quiet and gave me their sneers. I was still very much the brash new rich boy who had somehow wrangled control of their newspaper. I was a foreigner, with no right to barge in at a time like this and start asking questions. Sheriff Coley smiled as usual, as if these encounters happened all the time around midnight.
"Yes, sir, Mr. Trainer."
He had a slow, rich drawl that was very soothing. This man couldn't tell a lie, could he? "What can you tell us about the murder?" With his arms folded across his chest, he gave a few of the basics in cop speak.
"White female, age 31, was attacked in her home on Benning Road. Raped, stabbed, murdered. Can't give you her name until we talk to her kinfolks."
"And you've made an arrest?"
"Yes, sir, but no details now. Just give us a couple of hours. We're investigating. That's all, Mr. Trainer."
"Rumor has it that you have Danny Padgett in custody."
"I don't deal in rumors, Mr. Trainer. Not in my profession. Yours neither."
Wiley and I drove to the hospital, sniffed around for an hour, heard nothing we could print, then drove to the scene on Benning Road.
The cops had cordoned off the house, and a few of the neighbors were huddled quietly behind a strand of yellow police ribbon near the mailbox. We eased next to them, listening intently, hearing almost nothing. They seemed too stunned to talk. After a few minutes of gawking at the house, we crept away. Wiley had a nephew who was a part-time deputy, and we found him guarding the Deese home, where they were still inspecting the front porch and the swing where Rhoda took her last breath. We pulled him off to the side and behind a row of Mr. Deese's crepe myrtles, and he told us everything. All off the record, of course, as if the gory details would somehow be kept quiet in Ford County.